Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cynthia Hyatt, professional psychotherapist and relationship expert. In private practice for over 20 years, Cynthia specializes in teaching individuals, groups, and organizations about how to be successful in relationships, how to handle the variety of differences each gender brings, and ultimately, how to be your own best version. With a dynamic and enthusiastic approach, Cynthia helps each person understand how temperament and gender affects every relationship and inspires her audiences to become all God created them to be. With this understanding, she shares practical tools, resources, and wisdom to guide each person to a transformational understanding of themselves and others. You can find Cynthia on the web at CynthiaHyatt.com and on social media under Cynthia Hyatt, Inc. for current events, updates, and inspiration during your week. And now, here's Cynthia.
Well, welcome to Conversations with Cynthia, and I'm so glad you joined me today. I'm always glad when we are able to take some time and look at some things and think about some things and learn some things. And so today, this show is called Are You Called to Comfort? And it is a show on compassion fatigue. So are you called to comfort? And many of us are called to comfort and care for others. And sometimes we are called to care for others because we have to. Sometimes it's because we want to. And sometimes it's a combination of both. But how do we comfort others with the comfort we've received and do it in a way that gives life to both the giver and the receiver? So caregiver burnout is a very specific and very real issue. And it is physical, emotional, mental exhaustion, and that may be accompanied by a change in attitude from positive and caring to the negative, the unconcerned or apathetic or even resentful. And so it can occur when caregivers don't get the help they need or if they're trying to do more than they're able, either physically or financially, spiritually, emotionally, all of that. So caregivers that are quote-unquote burned out, like we said, they may experience fatigue, stress, anxiety, depression, resentment, apathy. Just some of why does it even matter or what's the point to all this? And so many times caregivers can feel really guilty if they spend time on themselves rather than on the person that they are actually giving care to. So today we're going to look at how to know if you're burning out, what the feelings are that come with caring for another person on any level, and how to do it in a healthy way. So, how do we comfort others with the comfort we've received and do it in a way that gives both the caregiver and the receiver life? So most of all, we're going to really learn the ability to comfort well. And we're going to understand that if I am able to comfort somebody well, it is always connected to my ability and my willingness to receive care. So I like the verse in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, and I know you're very, very familiar with this verse. And it says, "Praise to the God of all comfort, of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we've received ourselves from God." And so when we think about this, that God is the God of all comfort, and he comforts us in our troubles so that we can then comfort those in any trouble with the comfort that we ourselves receive from God. So when you think about this, you have to remind yourself that, and we're going to talk a lot about this in the next half hour, that if I don't receive or don't have the ability to receive or the willingness to receive care myself, I am not going to be able to comfort others with the comfort that I've received because it's not sustainable within me. I'm not able to sustain enough of the energy that I need to be able to give to someone that's needing that level of care. So I like Psalms 34, verse 18. And this is in the Message Bible. It says, "If your heart is broken, you'll find God right there. If you're kicked in the gut, he'll help you catch your breath." And that same verse, Psalms 34:18, in the New International Version, it's beautiful. It says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit." So it is a high calling to be a comforter. It's powerful, and it's an extension of the divine. So it is an energy drain, and it must be replenished through self-care and receiving what you are willing to give. So our energy to comfort is not sustainable, and it must be replenished. So care and comfort and empathy, these are spiritual expressions done through natural behaviors. And the need to continue the natural behaviors must be replenished through spiritual. So when we see this, we want to say to ourselves, there are positives about being a caregiver. There are also negatives. But what are some of the positives? Well, despite the sadness and shock of having a loved one with a debilitating illness, terminal illness, or a horrific injury, today we're kind of talking about the issue of cancer. Well, many find personal satisfaction in caring for that person. And so you might see it as a meaningful role that allows you to show your love and respect for that person. It may also feel good to be helpful and know that you're needed by a loved one. So we can find that caregiving enriches our lives. You might feel a deep sense of satisfaction and accomplishment through doing this. You might also learn about inner strengths and abilities that you didn't even know that you had. And you might find a greater sense of purpose for your own life, because caregiving also opens doors to new friends and relationships. And many times we get to know people through this process and knowing other people that might be going through the same thing with their loved ones. It also can draw families closer together, and it also can make it very difficult, because when you're the primary caregiver, you may have you may be at odds with some of the family members that you are have in your family that you're working with as to how to care for that person. And so that can be extremely stressful. So when we talk about this, we're going to talk about some of those stressors later in this set, in this show. So we also want to remember that caregiving can be frustrating and painful. And people caring for very sick patients may notice that their own feelings of severe sadness and emotional distress become difficult to manage as well. And they can develop their own physical symptoms, like tiredness and trouble sleeping and having a difficult time making decisions and feeling overwhelmed, consumed. So there is more likely to be a problem for caregivers who aren't able to get the support that they need themselves or who don't take care of themselves, especially those of us who might try to press on alone. So caring for someone that is going through cancer especially is a demanding role. But being good at it can give you a sense of meaning and pride. And so these good feelings can give you the strength and endurance to continue the role for as long as you are needed. So what does a good caregiver do? Well, caregivers have many roles. So the roles change as the patient's need changes during and after their treatment. So always remember that I'm talking specifically about cancer, but this also applies to any of you who have maybe family members that have Parkinson's disease or multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, also people that have been in a horrific accident or have been injured or maybe have long-term care because of transplants that they have had to endure. So what we want to think about is when I am being a good caregiver, I have to know that my role will change as the treatment progresses. And one of the things that we may find ourselves doing if we are really working in the home and being a primary caregiver to that person is that we may be helping them to eat, we may be dressing them, we may be bathing them, we arrange schedules for them, we manage insurance issues, we provide transportation. I might also find myself being a legal assistant, a financial manager, a housekeeper. And so they often, those of us that are caregivers, have to take over duties of the person with cancer and still meet the needs many times of some of the other family members. So you have a huge influence as a caregiver, and it's both positive and negative as to how well the patient deals with their illness. Now, always remember that we can be the perfect caregiver and do everything right and be the perfect comforter, and it still may not always work. It still may not always have the effect that we want, and someone still may be unable to receive the care and support that we want to give them. However, my encouragement to that patient to stick with that demanding treatment plan and all those other steps that they need to take, you know, to get better, like eating healthy and meals and getting enough rest, is still imperative that if I'm the primary caregiver, I do that, even if I don't receive the respect, the admiration, the encouragement from family members or even from that patient or sometimes the medical staff that I have to deal with. So another thing that caregivers do, we solve problems. So especially, you know, if we're talking about someone that's facing cancer, there are so many new challenges. And these challenges and problems come up frequently, and we have to really work at prioritizing and managing the problems. And at first, sometimes we have to even understand what the problem is and know what the desired result is. Because caregivers with patients that are struggling with cancer, the amount of information and resourcing that needs to happen is huge and can be very overwhelming. So we have to be positive, we have to be careful, we have to be creative, we have to be focused and flexible when we're looking at being a source of strength. So what we want to really think about is we want to help patients address, we want to help them address concerns, and we want to help them really become very involved in their own treatment and be as committed and bought into their treatment as we are. And we want to make sure that that patient has everything that they need if they are in the hospital. That means the prescriptions and the non-related medicines that they might be taking home. We really want to know what are warning signs that we may need to know if we need to call the EMTs or call the doctor, or maybe we can just call the pharmacist. Maybe we can call another resource person that struggles with has known people struggling with cancer. But we want to really know when we are seeing things that are serious. And so these kinds of tasks are a lot for one patient to tackle on their own while they're trying to fight a horrible infection and while they're trying to fight cancer on top of it and all the different changes that are occurring to their body. So we also have to know that if I'm a caregiver, I'm a part of a team. And I need to really surround myself with a really good team. So if I somehow in that family system become the designated caregiver, I want to make sure that I understand how to delegate and know the people that I can depend on to delegate to. I also want to know that I'm a part of the medical team. And so I want them to know me very well and know my name, whether or not I have experience doing it. If I don't, that I'm a very good student and my availability and my ability to learn. And I want to make sure that the different family members know what it is that I'm doing and keeping them involved. And I have to really, really work on boundaries, because when I'm working with those two different teams, I work with the medical team and I'm working with the team of family and friends, I have to really have good boundaries that I don't take personally maybe their discrediting of what I'm doing, if they are disagreeing with what I'm doing, if they are criticizing what I'm doing, if they are just apathetic and ignoring what I'm doing and abdicating all their responsibility. I have to be really careful about those boundaries and knowing how I'm feeling, knowing how to take care of those feelings. And this is where we want to remind ourselves as caregivers, I need to have a caregiver for me. So I need to have a friend that is outside of that environment that I can go to and complain to and cry to and talk to and tell my frustrations and my sadness and my grief. So it's very important that we are practicing on an ongoing basis that good self-care. So we become very involved with the patient. And what we want to do is we want to help that patient live as normal a life as possible. And this is tough. This is tough to do. And we want to encourage them to share their own feelings. We want to support their efforts to share. We want to be very non-judgmental about how they're feeling and what they're thinking and what they're going through. And we also want to make sure that they know that they feel safe enough to talk to us and talk to us about some of the feelings that they even may have about other family members and the fears that they have that they're having to face, especially when we have children that are involved. And so remember that people communicate differently, and some people like to do it through writing. Some use a lot of gestures, expressions. Some people like to be touched. Some people really respond to affection. Some people don't. And so we really want to learn how best to communicate care and concern to that person. So we want to take our cues from that person. We want to understand that, you know, when we are caregiving someone in a terminal situation or is fighting a very life-threatening illness, that we become very personal with them, and we want to be highly respectful of what they're experiencing and the things that we know about their body that they may not ever have anybody know. And so we also want to respect their time that they may need to be alone. And we also want to respect more than anything the time we need to be alone. So what are some symptoms of caregiver burnout that you might begin to, if you are experiencing, I want you to begin to recognize? A lot of them are similar to symptoms of stress and depression. And so they include things like my desire to withdraw from family or friends or other loved ones. I may have a loss of interest in activities I previously enjoyed. I might start feeling blue or irritable, hopeless, helpless, apathetic, or cynical, skeptical, critical, these types of things. I might have a change in appetite or weight or both. So I might stop eating because I'm getting so much adrenaline out of all the different things that I'm doing. It may cause me to feel a little bit more in control if I'm not taking time to stop and care for myself in that way. Or I may be gaining weight because it might be the only way that I feel like I'm getting any reward or any kind of comfort or care. Or I may be gaining weight because I'm ignoring what I'm eating. And I may just be eating on the go and whatever is in front of me versus really understanding I do have some control over time. And the only thing that has to be dealt with immediately is blood, broken bones, somebody has stopped breathing, different things that their body is plummeting. Those things we have to deal with immediately. Otherwise, we have 5 minutes to stop, relax, and find something healthy to eat. And so we also might find that we want to hurt ourselves or the person that we're caring for. And I say that because nobody wants to talk about that. And you need to hear it if you are a primary caregiver for someone, that there are times when you might want to feel like, oh, I just, this person. And sometimes when people are in situations where they are requiring this level of care, they are extremely unhappy and they are in tremendous amounts of pain. And they are not always the easiest people to deal with. We may want to hurt ourselves out of frustration. We may feel so badly about what's going on with that other person. So there's lots of reasons that we might be feeling some of the feelings of harm. And we want to be really aware of what that means. And that means that we're maxing out, that we are tapping out completely. And so we're going to also probably feel some emotional or physical exhaustion. So the causes of burnout is often because we're so busy caring for others that we don't take care of ourselves. So we neglect our own emotional, physical, and spiritual health. And we talked about that. And I'm going to say it again and again and again. I cannot be a good caregiver if I cannot receive care of myself. And so if I'm going to be a really good caregiver, this is not the time for me to martyr myself. And I say that really emphatically, that if I want to be a good caregiver, that means I need to really make sure I'm taking care of myself because it is a marathon. And so the demands on the caregiver's own body, mind, and emotions can easily be overwhelming, and it will lead to fatigue and hopelessness and ultimately burnout if I'm not taking care of myself and having other people that are helping me with that and helping to hold me accountable for it. So sometimes the other thing that leads to burnout is there's some role confusion. And so many people are confused when they're thrust into the role of a caregiver, and it can be difficult for a person to separate his or her role as a caregiver from your role as the spouse or the lover, a child, if it's your parent, if you're a friend to this person, you're the best friend, and all of a sudden you become the caregiver. So these roles can get very confusing, and the boundaries sometimes really blur, and we lose a lot of our identity as to who we were originally. The type of person, the role we had originally in this person's life, we may completely lose that part of our identity, and it gets kind of taken over by the caregiving role. So we also might have unrealistic expectations on ourselves. And so many times we as caregivers expect that my involvement always has to have a positive effect, and the person always gets healthier and they're always happier. And this just may not be realistic, because sometimes as a primary caregiver, we are helping people to die gracefully. And that's one of the hardest things that we can do in that role, but it is one of the blessed, more blessed things that we also can do. So we want to be very careful about our expectations. And another issue that leads to burnout many times is a lack of control. Because many times we as caregivers become very frustrated by lack of money, lack of resources, lack of skills on our part or the other people that in the life of this patient that we have, that they may be lacking skills or they may not be effectively planning. And so we have a difficult time managing and organizing the care of the person that we are loving and caring for. Sometimes we have unreasonable demands, not only expectations but demands. And we can place unreasonable burdens on ourselves, in part because I'm providing care, and I feel that I'm the one that's completely responsible. And so it can be unrealistic, the demands that are placed on you as a caregiver, if you don't have good boundaries. This is why we always want to have a team that says, I'm going to go home, and I need to go to sleep, and I need you to stay with so-and-so tonight for me, because I need to get a good night's sleep. And then as an act of love toward the person I'm caring for, I go home and I go to sleep and I sleep really, really well. And that's one of the most loving things I can do to that person, because that helps me do the marathon that I'm running with this person as they battle this horrific illness of cancer. So there are some other things, like sometimes I don't recognize when I'm burning out myself. And then what happens to caregivers that don't recognize when they're suffering from burnout, they get to the point they can't function at all, and they become sick themselves. And then the tremendous guilt and disappointment and frustration and condemnation that we place on ourselves as caregivers is tremendous. So we really want to avoid this issue of burnout. So how do I prevent this? Well, here are some steps that we're going to talk about that can help to prevent that. First of all, first and foremost, I find someone I trust, like we talked about earlier. Friend, coworker, neighbor, whoever that is, the nurse that's on the case of the person I'm taking care of, the social worker, the case manager, my pastor, whoever that is, that I can talk about my feelings and frustrations. And I want to make it very clear to you that you have to have a physical, natural, mortal person. It can't just be God. It can't just be a spiritual endeavor. You have to have someone that you voice these feelings to that hears you and offers care, comfort, and compassion back. The second thing is I need to set realistic goals so that when I am helping and caregiving, that I know what is realistic and how I turn to someone else, when I turn to someone else, and who I turn to help with some of the other tasks. I need to be realistic about this person's disease. And I need to be very realistic about where they're at in their treatment, how effective it is being, how hard to push them, how hard to push myself, and where we are at in each stage of the battle. And I need to make sure that, again, I'm not forgetting about myself, that I set time aside for myself, even if it's 1 or 2 hours, even if it's 20 minutes around the block, I'm going to go take a walk, or while I go run errands, then I might sit at Starbucks for 15 minutes and just breathe and relax for a minute. So remember, taking care of yourself, this is not a luxury. This is an absolute necessity that anyone that is a good caregiver understands the responsibility of taking care of self. That this, again, is not the time to martyr yourself. That will harm the person you're trying to take care of. Another very important thing is talk to a professional. Depending on the level of care that you are needing to do, depending on lack of resources or the degree of the battle that you are trying to manage with someone, you may need to talk to a professional. Because most therapists and social workers or clergy members, the chaplain at the hospital, they're trained to counsel individuals dealing with a wide range of these physical and emotional issues that come with being a primary caregiver. So take advantage of respite care services as well. This provides temporary break for caregivers. If you can't trust the person you're taking care of with people that you know, friends, family, whatever, if that's the case, then you take advantage of respite care. Have the person you're caring for stay overnight in an assisted living facility so that you may get a break. So know your limits and do reality checks regular regularly of your personal situation. Educate yourself. The more that you know about the illness that you are caregiving, the more effective you will be in caring for the person with the illness, the more on top of it you will feel, and the more an expert and the more confidence you will have, which is very important when we're dealing with burnout. So you develop also new tools for coping. Remember to lighten up and accentuate the positive, and many times humor can help with everyday stressors, and so don't be afraid. Oh my goodness, laughter is very helpful for the soul. And so again, you practice staying healthy by eating right and exercising. Exercise, eating, and sleeping, and praying. These four things are imperative for us as humans, period. But when you are caregiving, you need to be very diligent about making sure that you are eating right, you are getting exercise, you are sleeping, and you are praying. You accept your own feelings. So if you have negative feelings, such as frustration or anger, or maybe the person that you're caregiving for did this to themselves. Now, we know that is not true with anyone struggling with cancer. But there are some of you that might have to care for people that they had a bad accident because of a DUI. And so you need to really accept the feelings that you have. Maybe the person that is battling cancer, you don't feel like they're being responsible or taking seriously their treatment. And so you may have really negative feelings or frustration or anger. So it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're a bad caregiver. It means you care. And that comes with caring. And so we have to know how to deal with those negative feelings well. If we stuff them, those feelings will harm us. So one of the things that we do here as we are coming to the end is to know when you're stressed, then you really want to take a second look at what the stressor really is. So is the stressor my feelings about me, that I don't like how I'm doing it? Is the stressor that I feel guilty because I don't want to do this? Is the stressor that I don't have enough resources to help this person? Is the stressor that they're not getting better? Is the stressor that I feel like my life has been hijacked? Is the stressor that I'm mad at God because I can't believe that God has done this to the person that I love or let this happen? Whatever those stressors are, you want to really say, wow, I need to recognize what is really stressing me out. Is it an esoteric philosophical problem? Is it a practical one, a literal problem? Is it both? So top five stressors we talked about are like the lack of control, unrealistic expectations, the uncertainty or fear of things, like I'm feeling overwhelmed, I don't know how to do this, having not enough respect for yourself, feeling isolated and unsupported. These really contribute to this whole issue of caregiver burnout. So as we come to the close of this, I just really want to commend you as caregivers and to thank you for doing that, because I don't think sometimes you realize how powerful it is, how important it is, and what a phenomenal calling and spiritual endeavor it is. And how much God appreciates you caring for the people that he cares for, even when we don't understand what God is doing. That we really want to know that feeding a person's soul by caring for them, having compassion, having patience, having long-suffering, having tremendous acceptance and mercy and grace, help whatever medical things need to be done to really accomplish what it was intended to do. So I pray for you, those of you that are in caregiving situations right now. I wish you the best. I know that my mom struggled with this, and I did myself with my father. He was in hospice for over a year. And it's a blessed thing to be a part of, but it takes a toll. So I pray you care for yourselves well, and you love yourselves well as you are loving the people in your life that you are caring for. Have a blessed week. And I will talk to you next week. We are going to address the issues of grief and loss, as many times the people that we are caring for pass. And so we are going to talk about the grief and loss issue, as well as the grief and loss that comes with the major life changes that a person goes through if they are dealing with a terminal illness, if they are battling a life-threatening illness or disease, and the life changes that come, and the grief and loss that comes with that amount of change. God bless you, and I'll talk to you next week.